Welcome to episode 32 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is 6 de Mayo, 2012. I am Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-avenger, James Furlough.
Oh, dude, I was going to mention something about assembling. Way to steal my thunder.
Man, oh, I get it.
I was pumped.
It's a Thor pun. I stole... Man, unbelievably good movie anyways. I'm sure that'll weave its way into this conversation.
We can't do any spoilers, but let's just get this out of the way now, Matthew. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being worst movie ever, which you might have to give us, like, you know, what do you think the worst movie you've ever seen was to help us gauge it. And then, you know, 10 being the best movie you've ever seen. Like, for me, that would be Top Gun. You know, where would you put Avengers?
Man, that's tough. Okay. So for 10 is The Matrix.
Ooh, okay.
And for me,
like,
I'm not even...
the first Matrix, right? Just to make sure? Or the entire
trilogy? Yeah.
Okay.
First Matrix. I actually like the second and third Matrix, but
I agree.
It's head and shoulders above.
I understand.
One is tough. What's the worst movie I've ever seen? Man.
Well, it's okay. So we know what your 10 is. Let's just go with that.
We'll say, like, Daredevil, Elektra, those two vehicles will be our floor.
Wow,
it's
Serendipity, but that's just because I start yelling at the movie.
Right.
Because I can't take it.
I'd have to give it a, it's tough, because it's like, there are very, very few movies that I would say I enjoyed more than that movie. I mean, it's right along with, like, District 9, which I think is a fantastic...
I hate that movie.
Okay, well, that's unfortunate. Well, okay, I'll give you this. Well, the thing is it's like, it's clearly not Lord of the Rings either. Like, this is tough.
Yeah,
when I actually
different.
Have to place it as an epic film, whatever, for what it is, it's great. I would say it is at least on par with The Dark Knight. It is easily the best superhero movie, tied for best superhero movie,
wow,
in my opinion.
Dark Knight was pretty good.
Made today.
I mean, it's a different type of movie.
I know. Right, they're just so different that they're. I think they're spaced to be tied there.
Okay.
And let's just be. They essentially picked the two of the major characters are two of my favorite superheroes ever, and were both unbelievably awesome. Yeah. So
wait,
for me,
so
it
who,
just
who
was
are
like
your two favorite superheroes ever.
Oh, Iron Man and the Hulk. Come on. Big angry superpower and the mechanical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what am I supposed to do? What about you? Where would you place it?
Yeah, so this is a movie that I am definitely going to spend money on to buy.
Yes.
When it's all said and done. Which I heard there was an Iron Man 3 coming out. So pumped about that.
Thor 2, Iron Man 3, what's the other one?
Why not keep milking it?
And the Shield.
Captain America.
Thank you, Captain America 2.
Cool. Not surprised, I guess. But I thought it was awesome. So I'm gonna give it 8 or 9. Definitely top 10 for sure.
Yeah.
And I am going to say that Joss Whedon is my favorite director of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of the best.
I like him more than who's the guy who did Avatar? Actually, I mean he's good.
James Cameron.
Yeah, he's not my favorite, but he's good. And then I mean Spielberg's obviously good, but I just love the way that Joss Whedon tells stories. It just
I'm gonna have to leave this totally vague. Because I can't give away any details.
We're trying very hard not to give away any details.
But the one thing I will say is that his attention, right as we were getting ready to go into the podcast, our dad was sitting down watching Iron Man 1 on TV, and just some of the things
did
that
he do Iron Man 1
I suddenly
as well?
Realized.
I didn't even know that.
No, James Farr. That was a different dude.
Okay,
that was what I was going to comment on was little things that different directors and different writers made decisions on about what Iron Man's going to be in the movies, mm-hmm. in like little details that I just didn't even think about. Like I would never even entered my mind of, hey, this is an important detail of not necessarily of the character's backstory or of like what he's like. It's just, but this is an important way to present Iron Man. Little details. And they did that just throughout for all the characters where they were really, really, really good about keeping each character consistent with the movie universe that they came from.
Yeah. How cool would that be? It's like, here's what you need to do. You need to sit down and read all of these comics to get an idea of who this character is. You know, it's just like, yeah, that's my job right now. I'm reading comics, learning about these characters. And then
I have a sneaky suspicion that was Josh Whedon's job the day he was born until the day he started directing that movie.
Yeah, really. But it's funny. So anyway, so obviously we thought it was a good movie and we could probably gush on about it all day. And you and I will have to talk more specifics offline.
Definitely. Later. But that's not what we're here to talk about. What we are here to talk about, we're going to talk about the same thing we talk about every week. Hopefully you find it enjoyable because James and I sure do. But we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. The soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. James got a short disclosure before.
Yeah, very short. And I just need a one-word answer whether or not it was awesome. So yes or no. IMAX 3D, awesome?
Oh, the best.
Okay, cool. So I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP's opinion. So I should always say I, and if I happen to say we, like I might have a couple times last week, I meant to say I.
Like seven times.
It's hard. It is genuinely hard.
It is hard. As a short disclosure also, I work for a company that I've signed quite a few non-disclosure agreements with. So, likewise, if I, because we're going to be touching base with that, with the industry I work in, I figured I'd mention that, that same thing. These are my opinions. They don't reflect the opinions of RCH Associates in any shape, form, manner, or way. And I refuse to, give away any secrets. So that being said, if you, want to follow us, you can follow us on Twitter. That's where we put most of our crazy updates. And I know I linked mine to Facebook, so you're not going to get much different from my personal Facebook cage. But you can follow me at Matthew D. Furlow.
Did you say cage or page?
Page. I meant page.
Okay, because that kind of would have been awesome if you said cage.
My Facebook cage. Yeah. Really, actually.
Anyways.
I might have to do that on purpose now.
So, yes, you can follow all of our information there. Sorry, I'll complete that thought for you.
What about – no. Hey, wait. Give your handle.
Oh, I'm at James Furlow.
Yeah, and the show, which we'll usually tag the show for talking about it, or we'll just post to the show directly, at Furlow Bros is the Twitter there. Go to furlowbros.com. We got the podcast. We got the links that we're going to talk about, all the articles, tons of information. You can like us, Facebook. You can find all this information there. It's a great resource. If you like what we talk about, definitely something worth checking out. But have fun with it.
Cool beans.
So
we're going to keep with the format that we tried last week, which is it's not really a drive-by of the news because we're incapable of doing that. But we are going to attempt to quickly talk about things that happened. And then at the very end, we'll wrap back with some bigger stories or dive deeper into things that we thought were important to dive deep into, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, with that, we can get this
get your pens ready, because we're going to get moving.
Yeah. Okay. We're in this weird part of year where stuff is happening. It's like, yeah. Christmas is no longer over. Spring break is done. We're walking into the summer season. And so companies are rocking and shaking.
There's also a lot of anxious anticipation. It's difficult to, from my perspective, it's kind of difficult to weed through the difference between speculation and, oh my gosh, huge stuff is happening. So.
Yeah.
Hopefully we got a good balance of all that stuff.
Speaking of speculation, we start off with a sad rumor. Well, sad for me. Hulu will soon require viewers to have a cable subscription. But and this requirement, though, is kind of weird. It's to say they actually say it will still be free, but if you don't have a cable subscription, there will then be a 30-day wait to watch the shows on Hulu.
That's not awful.
Well, I use Hulu all the time. That's my main way of watching shows.
Once you get past that first month,
then it's just normal scheduling.
Yeah, exactly. You'll just be a month behind everybody else. Yeah. When everybody else is whining about the slow season, you'll be like, "What? I still got all my new shows."
Yeah, very true.
You know,
very true. But yeah, so that's just interesting. You know, they're continuing to obviously they are owned by cable companies, and you know, NBC, I think Disney or ABC via Disney or something like that owns a piece of them, and so they are obviously, that is obvious, afraid of Hulu and disrupting their cable subscriptions, even though there's no data evidence to saying that that's happening. This is just one way of them protecting their content. I think it's like ESPN 3 or Go or Online or whatever it is, .com, requires you to have ESPN access or, cable subscription of sorts in order to access it.
Right.
So it's going to be kind of like that, except I guess you still get to do it just with a 30-day wait for now, and then it'll be 60 days, and then whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, eventually, okay, we can get into this later.
Okay.
I was about to get into it.
So, that's Hulu. Another one, which I didn't highlight for later, and I might. So I don't know if you've been paying attention to the Kickstarter scene at all, but there is Kickstarter is this website that basically, if you have a project, you can post it on it and say, I would like to raise money to, see this come true. Like, for example, let's just say, theoretically, you create a watch that has e-ink technology in it that can connect via Bluetooth to a smartphone and display, like, notifications, text messages, that kind of stuff. And you're just like, we have a prototype of it. We want to build it. We need some cash to get started. You can put it on a Kickstarter and say, hey, we're trying to raise, $100,000 in the next 20 days. And if you contribute like $100, we'll send you a watch, which will normally retail for $150. If you give us $150, we'll give you a red one, which no one else will have. And,
nice.
And then it's like,
if I you like this hype.
Go up and up.
I like this hypothetical situation that you've pitched. Somebody should definitely do this because it seems really well thought out.
It is a good idea. And if someone did it, I bet you that they could raise close to $8 million in less than 2 weeks. Whoa, check it out. There's a company that actually did that. Their name is Pebble.
Whoa.
And that's what they're doing. And they also created an API. And so Runkeeper, which is this app that tracks your runs for you. Where you went, how far you went, how fast you did it, that kind of stuff. Classic run tracker. That you'll be able to display like your pace, time, and stuff like that eventually once it's all set up. But the crazy thing is, Pebble, cool, awesome. But it's like the real story here is Kickstarter. I mean, it's this thing
right.
That's like it's come of age, and crowdfunding is, that's where it's at. For whatever reason, customers love to get behind and vote for products they love.
it's the threadless model writ large. I mean, it's you know, clearly it works. It's a good idea. You know, the thing that's impressive to me is how many people, you know, they sit there and say, yeah, we got a prototype, you know, and we just need money to do it. And how many people are willing to throw money in, you know, without, you know, without an actual, without being able to walk into a store and say, oh, this is a cool watch, you know? I mean, I don't know. You know, granted, you get a steep discount, so that's pretty cool, but.
Yeah, no, it is cool. And they are up to, by the way, with 11 days left to go, $8.8 million with 58,000 backers. So 58,000 people have pledged money of $100 or more to, you know, help them reach their dream. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a neat way if you got a cool idea to raise some money. They're the record holder right now, so that's not typical. Results not typical.
Right.
yeah, but still. You know, if you got a good idea, it can clearly go crazy. There's been a few that I don't even remember the name of it, but there was that one that was supposed to be a Facebook competitor that they, you know, they raised a ton of money at the time, and that's gone nowhere. Awesome. So, you know, whatever. It's just as risky as anything else, I guess. But there it is.
Right.
Speaking of risky things that could die, we need to have a moment of silence for Google Wave. It is dead. Okay.
That was our moment of silence. it's dead. Now, what do you mean by dead? Because it's been dead-ish for a while. Is it like you can't, you know, you can't even get your archive stuff anymore?
Wave dot Google. I can spell google.com. Goes to a support site that says status of Google Wave is the title of it. It's done. Shut down. Doesn't even go to it.
Wow.
It's gone.
Bummer.
Yep. Hope you took a screenshot.
Well, you know, really. You know, the technology is still omnipresent within Google, but it's, you know, as a service, people were excited about it, and that just, you know, that was not good PR. I think Google has to figure out a better way of handling that sort of a thing, you know.
But yeah, it's just one of those, had that invented before email, I think it would have been awesome.
Right, yeah, good point. Good point. yeah, actually, so quick anecdote about dying technologies and ending services. So I was surfing YouTube. I like watching videos of people sculpting and stuff because it totally gives me that like tingly feeling on my forehead. So I'll watch like hours of people sculpting stuff.
You are
clay.
Weird.
It's kind of weird. Yeah, but it's
that
it's
is weird.
Super. It feels so good. I don't even know.
That
but,
is.
But
oh my god! All right, cool.
But fetishes. But I was watching it and I noticed that on the top of my screen Google had this link saying, hey, Google Video is like going away and you have videos on Google Video.
Oh yes,
like,
that's right.
You do not have videos on Google Video. What is wrong with you, Google? They're like, you gotta migrate it over to YouTube. So I click on the link and boom, there is this old video of me that I had made and I had posted privately, but had shared with my then girlfriend. That was sort of, you know, I want to make up. We were in the middle of an argument. I was in Washington. She was in Stockton. It was kind of this sweet video I made, which for those of you who don't know that she's no longer my girlfriend, that was an awfully nice, painful jab, Google. Thanks for that one. Thanks for that reminder.
Oh, man.
So I got about 30 seconds in the video and I went, deleting this. I don't need that. Hanging around. nothing personal, Kendra. Just didn't need that one. But yeah, good times. So thanks for that, Google.
Oh, I'm just going to sit here awkwardly.
I'm going to say, the only thing I can
still
say
reeling
is
from
it actually
I like
did.
To watch people. Like, that is just. You're weird, man.
Sculpt. You know, it could be, dude. I would never want to see the videos that I don't want to ever see anybody's YouTube history. Just knowing the sort of like rabbit holes that I get on YouTube, where I watch like all like past 3 hours of like, what am I even watching? You know, I don't want to know what anybody else watches. I'm happy to just go through. Because even though it's like not, it's not really that weird or disturbing, it's still just nobody needs to know. Anyways, so we're gonna move along to my speaking of YouTube and Google, they're probably not gonna be around in 5 years, so we're gonna have to go through all of this again. pretty big article, Forbes magazine. No, not Forbes. Yes, Forbes. Sorry, Forbes.com. Basically, an editorial explaining why Facebook and Google aren't going to be around, and in a lot of really in-depth, interesting studies about the nature of changing trends and how generational groups do things differently. You know, and not just, you know, generations like Generation X, Generation Y, the millennials. But also, you know, generations of companies and how they operate, and how Google and Facebook sit on a very dangerous ledge. But essentially, the article and what the argument is that they're not the type of companies, they're not dealing with the type of people who do a very good job of sticking with companies through paradigm shifts. And so essentially what the argument was is that we're shifting to mobile in a big way, and Google and Facebook are going to have a really hard time making it through that disruption, which we've been talking about forever, but I just thought it was a fascinating article because they really got into what that looks like. And I have some more commentary, but we'll come back around to that one later.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that. So, man, another rumor. which might be more less than a rumor now. I can't remember. But Digg, our favorite thumbs up, thumbs down company for news, is going to be acquired by the Washington Post. But here's what's weird about that. They're buying the team of people, but not the web property. How does that work?
Really?
I don't know how that works. So it's like, so apparently the website is up for sale, but not including the team of people who would keep it running.
Wait.
I don't understand.
What?
So the Washington Post, they have their own service, and that helps, you know, curate web stuff. And they want to help bring in, you know, people to help build up their own service, so they don't need to. So let's see here.
So Digg might not survive because they're basically buying the engineers who run Digg in order to get that sort of functionality to somebody with a better brand, which is the WashingtonPost.com. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, it's not the WashingtonPost.com. It's like their own thing. But I mean, yeah, I mean at this point in time it's a rumor where no one's really talking. It's one of those rumors with a massive amount of detail, where you just go, which I don't know. That sounds kind of weird to me personally to do that. But I wonder if that means this is starting to be the end of Digg, which I know that they went through that. You know, they had trouble for a while, and then they went through a huge revamp after Kevin Rose came back on, and it didn't seem to help at all. Though I get like Digg invites all the time. I get 2 to 4 a day.
Really? Yeah. I'm pretty sure Google just filters out everything Digg from me. You know, one of the things, I gotta be honest, one of the selling points of Reddit, definitely never sends you any emails. You know, kind of nice for it, especially since it's one of those websites that I find that I travel to more than my email. There's no need.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, Digg's it's a weird one. It's one that you love because it's older, but it just for whatever reason they're moving beyond their time.
Well, I think they made a really, really, really difficult technology shift at the exact same moment they made some really big cultural shifts in where they wanted the company to go and how they wanted the site to function. And the combination of the two, you know, either one, you make either one of those changes, either you change, you know, fundamental technology. They went from a classic PHP MySQL database system to a Apache server. It's much more distributed, it's way more robust, but the transition just flumped, you know, tons of data was lost. You know, user private profiles got turned upside down. Mm-hmm. The site wasn't functioning the way it was supposed to function. They at the same time, they messed with their fundamental algorithms of how they curate information, how they bring it to you. And they did those on purpose. Those weren't changes that they made just with the technology. And I think what they should have done was, you know, in retrospect, you should have done one and then a couple months later the other, and it should have been much more gradual, as opposed to, you know, we're going to have this beta site. It's kind of cool. Check it out. Everybody went and checked it out and was like, oh, this is stupid, and went back to the regular site, and then just one day switched plugs and everything collapsed, you know. And Reddit, all it had to do was not change at all, and everybody jumped ships. Yep, so all the rest is history.
True. Very true. So other good news, if you happen to work for HP, which I happen to, HP has reclaimed the top spot in PC sales.
Is that including tablets or not?
It is, actually.
Really?
Yeah. You like that? So,
all right, you caught my attention.
So HP outsold Apple by 40,000 computers, including tablets.
Whoa, that's a small margin. Holy cow.
Yeah, I would put that in the So this is let's see here. So it's another Canales research thingy. I would put that in what's the word I'm looking for? Margin of error. That's the word.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about on 15.8 million units.
Right. And there's no hard numbers. It's, you know, numbers in the channels versus numbers sold and stuff. That's a difficult one. But
yeah. So,
that being said,
I mean, it's so ample. Apple's not trouncing everybody. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's close, however you want to do it. So, you know, that's cool, I guess.
Well, you know, and this is just my opinion, but I think PC sales, you know, from I think PC, Apple, sale, you know, Apple obviously had a blowout quarter. They sold a tremendous number of computers and iPads, and the fact that HP it didn't just keep up but effectively tied Apple is a great sign for the economy as a whole, and especially the technology sector, which, as I'm affected by both of those things, I'm happy about. You know, so.
Yeah. And there's actually a picture on Engadget of one of HP's computers. It looks very similar to an iMac.
It's one of those ultrabooks that you can't tell the difference between.
So it's an iMac. So it's the desktop. Yeah, with the laptop. I mean, it's got the screen all in one. Instead of it being like a metal bottom, it's a black bottom. No, I mean it looks.
James, you should know this. HP had... Oh, yeah, that's remarkably iMac-ish.
Weird, huh?
I mean, it's definitely not an iMac, but it was inspired by an iMac.
Which, hey, you know, whatever it takes to win in the short run, that's what I say.
Right.
So, hey, cool. You know, I'll take it.
I don't want to talk bad about HP, but I have a sneaky suspicion that was sort of everybody's attitude when it was... You know, their turn to come up with those numbers. We have to beat Apple by any means necessary. I don't care how you have to massage those numbers to make them equal 40K more. We're going to win.
Yeah, and I have no insight into that. Even if I did, I wouldn't tell you if those were accurate or not. But
yeah,
I don't even know. I don't even know how I could know, which is probably okay. So Twitter also came out with a new Discover thing on their tweet thing, which they've always had like a Discover tab. I don't know if you ever mess around with it. I've done it a couple times, just because I'm bored and you're like, all right, well, what's hot or whatever. It's like it kind of replaces their trending thing. It's kind of like trending, but not. It's more just we think this is interesting or something like that. But they've revamped it. And they're trying to make it, like I said, take it more away from the trending and try to make it more personalized. This is news that I would be interested in, or tweets that I would be interested in, as opposed to, everyone would be interested in these.
Can I just say something really quick? I think that's what killed Dig.
I
honestly
agree.
You know, that was the cultural shift to me that really put it over the edge. You know, it was like they were trying to, they try to get away from the downvote, away from the thumbs down, the Barry, whatever it was. You know, which I think was a mistake, but I think you could survive that. To me, it really was the attempt to personalize it. And I have, you know, this, you know, I probably ranted about this on this show before, but the reason why I don't like Subway is because I don't know what tastes good. I'm not a chef. That's not my job. I mean, I know if I enjoy it or not, but I don't make sandwiches for a living. Tell me what's good, you know? And usually, you know, I find that those really, you know, where they really try to self, you know, they try to, we're gonna try to figure out what you like and then serve up exactly what you want. I find that those never really work because it requires me to be good at, you know, picking what I like, which I'm not actually very good at, you know, and I don't know if it's because I'm bad at, you know, thumbs up and your thumbs down and stuff, because I'm pretty good at training myself to remember to do that. But I find that the overall result is if I ever get something that's really personalized to me, I'm usually disappointed by the results compared to just the general, hey, this is everything. You know, I'm much more curious about what's trending over time. You know, and this is really a common theme in a lot of different services where they try to pigeonhole you based on what
Facebook
you've done.
Facebook kind of does that with the status updates, right? They don't show you every one of them. They show you the ones that they think you'll want to see. Now, granted, that's not news. At least, you know.
But I find that there's a lot of people that I'll realize, like, a year and a half later, man, I've never seen one update. I'd like to know what's going on with them. And right. So you'll check out their Facebook page, and all of a sudden it'll just flood your news feed. You're like, okay, can I get some balance, Facebook? just a little bit of something. Well, and what's weird is you tend to pay attention to the friends that they present to you, which means that over time you focus in on a smaller and smaller and smaller group. When it could have been just, you know, I hadn't talked to this friend in a while, and or he had a number of good links, and all of a sudden this person is like, you know, Facebook is dedicated to, we're going to give you everything about this person. Like, I don't want everything.
Right.
And the one thing I can say is I managed to get no really stupid comments in my life. I managed to get, like, I don't have, like, any religious debates. I don't have any political debates. I don't have any. I don't have dumb memes. I've got everything that comes up on my Facebook. I've been rather pleased by the fact that at least Facebook manages to, if I have any dumb friends, Facebook hides them from me really well.
Well, I don't see any of your updates, so no, I'm kidding. So there is this thing called an interest graph. Facebook owns this thing called the friendship graph,
right.
Who you're friends with, or constellation, I think is another way to think about it. But then there's things that you're interested in. And so far, no one has really conquered that thing. I mean, like, could you imagine, like, right now, we follow, like, all of our news is on RSS. And if it's not on RSS, I'm not following it, you know, pretty much.
Right, yeah.
And it's more like I have found specific niche-ish blogs that, you know, cover all that news. And I'm willing to just wade through the stuff that I don't care about to find those few things that I do care about. And, you know, and that's the extent of my interest graph, you know, it's my RSS reader. And there's this real potential out there for something like Twitter where it's got everything. You know, it's got all RSSs, really. And to say, okay, James, we realize that you like these certain tech sites, but we also realize that you actually like these types of articles within these tech sites. And we've noticed that you've got, you share them in common with these other people, Pandora-like. Here, we think that you would enjoy these stories. And it would be awesome to get to a point where you're like, man, 99% of these Discover stories are cool. My biggest problem is, if it is cool, chances are I've already seen it because I go there last.
Right.
Instead of first. And, yeah. You know, and then I'm always afraid of missing something. So, you know, there's that too. It's not a – my biggest problem is I don't do it casually. Oh, if I miss something, cool. No, I'm not going to miss something. That's not an option. So I don't know. It's tough. I don't know how to do that. And no one's really cracked that yet. And Twitter's trying to go after it, and they should, because they have access to a ridiculous amount of information.
Yeah.
And
if they come up with a great service. Cool. You know, I think if they can come up with a great, yeah. That was actually going to be my one caveat, is that, well, for whatever reason, Pandora seems to do a pretty good pretty good job of serving up music I like, and pretty much I've got like four channels that I listen to pretty regularly, and one that's just like my omni channel that I've been working on. I've been carefully crafting for the last 5 years, and so it's not impossible to have that sort of, populating what you want to listen to based on what you like. But the thing is that the whole music genome project was one part user fed and the other part, they have a bunch of musicians that actually classify and shape music,
Yeah.
and both of those go into the filter. So it's not, once again, it's where professionals get involved and tell you, hey, this is what sounds good. And they don't just listen to my opinions, which thank goodness.
Yeah, really. I mean, music's kind of hard because you need to somehow make some sort of searchable text and add tags to it.
Right.
In some ways, articles have that, so you don't necessarily need that. But I don't know. I
That's
mean,
true.
Google News has been trying it for a while, and so far it hasn't worked out great. That is my dog in the background, if you can hear it.
Yes, it is. I can.
That's awesome.
He's getting rambunctious.
Weird. So, anyways, that's Twitter.
Yeah. Cool. Speaking of other giant companies, I always like to talk about specific individuals within the company. Scott Forstall works for Apple. He's been described as the CEO in waiting by quite a few people. They think if when Tim Cook steps down, and that could be 20 years, that could be 6 months, whatever. Scott Forstall is pretty much the next dude in line. He
Who
was
thinks this?
the guy, the echo chamber.
Ah.
Basically, he was the dude on stage with Steve Jobs for the last few years, while Steve Jobs was, really allowing somebody else to take a lot of the lion's share of the talking. He always presents all your iOS stuff, new apps and whatnot. But he sold 95% of his stock, which everyone was like, it was worth $38 million. It was like 60,000 some odd shares.
Wow.
But the thing is that they did mention the fact that that chunk of shares that he sold was actually part of a what are those bonuses called, where they
Retention
great a
bonus?
retention, thank you, a multi-year retention bonus. And he's actually got like three or four more even bigger ones coming down the pipe. So Scott, they're saying that when all is said and done, as long as the stock price doesn't drop, dramatically below its current levels, Scott Forstall will be worth about $250 million by the time all is said and done. Just
Wow.
nuts. So he'll be around Apple for a while, I think. Which
Maybe.
is good news for Apple,
Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I thought it was time that we give a little update on our Wahoolie friends. So,
Cool.
and I thought this opening paragraph on this article was pretty good. I think it just describes it well. Basically, it says, with the passage of the Jobs Act, it means that normal people can fund startups. It says that crowdfunding is going to get a whole lot more interesting, like Kickstarter, basically, and a
Right.
whole lot more crowded. And so it says that now that everyone and their mother can invest in startups, hundreds of crowdfunding portals are starting their engines. And Wahoolie happened to jump on the trend early, soft launching back in September before all the buzz. And so they landed it at an angel round. I think I should know this number. It's about $750,000. I'd take it.
Whew.
And that's enough to kind of keep them going, pay some of their employees, that kind of
Some of their
stuff.
bills, yeah.
Yeah,
There's like
which is
four of them,
cool.
isn't there?
Yeah, not much. And they just brought on a new guy to help out. Let's see. They recently brought on Nathan Beckard, who is a founder and lead advisor at Venture Archetypes. He's been an advisor for like 13 different startups, five of which have had exits, which is good. So they're bringing on some good people, but it sounds like they're still kicking, still doing their thing. They've
Yeah.
partnered, they're still doing their clout partnership and helping you know, so it's a little bit different than Kickstarter in the sense that they're actually given a piece of the company to them. So it's more of a long-term investment as opposed to Kickstarter, where it's like, I'm paying you money up front for the product, basically.
Hey, if anybody's curious who hasn't been listening to our show and hasn't gone back and listened to every episode we've ever done, we actually had a really good hour-long interview with Dana Severson, who's one of the co-CEOs, co-founders. I don't know if he's co-CEO. I can't remember.
He's one of the co-founders.
CEO of Wobbly. He was a really nice guy, really interesting conversation. It does sound like it was recorded with technology from the 1950s, because it kind of was. but it's a really, there's a lot of good content there. So if you're interested more on that one, definitely go check out the thrillerbros.com and scroll back a couple, as I guess it was late last year. Definitely a good one.
Yeah, it was good. So they're still doing well. You know, getting money is always a good sign.
Yeah,
because it means that other people have, you know, faith in them. So good luck, Wahooly. Keep rocking it. Keep doing well.
Woo-hoo.
I'm excited for them.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully we'll get to talk to Dana again at some point. So EA got crazy this week. This story broke on Reddit around Tuesday or Wednesday. EA basically sent out a push notification to all iOS devices that had Rock Band on it, saying effectively on May 31st, your app is no longer going to be functional, so thanks for the time. And everybody was like, I paid full price for this app. There was no indication that it would be a limited time subscription. What the heck is going on?
Yeah, that's a little weird.
People definitely freaked out when that happened. The blogosphere started to try to get into it. They called the actual developers of Rock Band, who built the game, and asked them, what's the deal here? Why is it going offline? And the developer's like, we don't even know. We don't know anything about it. We're just finding out about this now. This is a decision EA made. It's not contingent on any outside service, like a website or something that serves up content that they're closing down. It's a standalone app. The only thing we know is that there is the next generation of the app is coming out in October. So the theory is EA has in the past, like, killed apps or has, like, stopped supporting apps. Like SimCity, they don't support it anymore. Tetris, they stopped supporting the original one and then released a new one that will continue to get updates, but you have to pay full price the second time.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never done this before, and according to reports I read as of, like, Thursday, they were still charging full price for the app in the App Store, despite the fact that if you bought it by May 31st, it would go away. So
weird.
Everybody's really upset. People are, Apple's getting caught in the center of this one because they didn't know what was going on either. But yet they're, it's their store. They're responsible for this sort of garbage. So
if I bought it, it's mine.
Right, exactly. EA doesn't actually believe that at all. You know, if you think Apple is the evil empire of you don't own what you pay for, EA is the evil galactic empire of that. They're terrible. They're so bad about who owns that property. This is not surprising from EA at all, in my opinion. But it's a pretty dirty move, and we'll keep you updated on any new stuff that comes out with that and what they're trying to get at. Because it's potential that they have the In fairness, I don't like to be fair, but I'll try. It's potential. There is a chance that there is a legitimate explanation behind what is going on, but EA has just not bothered to let anybody know what that is.
Weird.
Speaking of companies that aren't doing as well as they should, BlackBerry. BlackBerry is collapsing. Tribute. So they had this big conference this week, and Monday morning news started coming out how, like, attendance is really, really bad. Their stock tumbled but it got even worse as the week went on. They made an announcement. One of the big things that they're doing is if you're developing for their new operating system, BlackBerry 10, they are guaranteeing that if you have the app ready to go in their app store before the launch of the new operating system, that you will make $10,000 in your first year.
I wonder what their definition of ready to go is.
Yeah, really, because, you know,
I can make a button that you push. I can make a
note-taking app pretty easy. Right, a fart app.
Bam, 10 grand handed over.
Yeah, let's do this. You know, but it's funny when you think about it for what successful apps make and what it can take to make a full-fledged app. It's a pittance. You know, that's a full-blown engineer.
Dude, I would take it.
Programming engineer. Well, yeah, you would take it, but if you're like a serious app developer, that's nothing.
Well,
that's nothing.
That's true.
You know, because, you know, how much does it cost to, let's say you're Instagram and you haven't been bought by Facebook yet and you're looking to expand to another platform, you know, but you've got 12 people on your staff. Many of them are, you know, kind of expensive engineers. You know, even though you're paying them as startups, so you can pay them, you're still talking it could be $60,000 a year. You know, that's pennies. Your BlackBerry's really only trying to entice small single person developers that are already developing for the other app ecosystems, which, you know, may make sense, except unless it takes a full rewrite of your app. Anyways, the long and short of it was that all the financial dudes thought that was a horrible sign that they have to do that, because there's no interest and they can't really offer up very, you know, it's not like Microsoft who can throw huge amounts of cash behind good app ideas, you know, and really bring it to their app store and bolster their app store. It's just, it's way too little, way too late. So that was a bad deal. And right on the same day, news came out, big study done, the federal government looking at who's using what phones. As of 2009, well over, it was like 77% of managers were using a BlackBerry in the federal government. Now less than half are using them in a 3-year period, and iPhone usage in the federal government has tripled. And what's interesting is that it seems like there's still a real movement against Android. For whatever reason, Android's not a trusted device. The quote that they had in the
which is weird, because you would think that the government would have their own Android super lockdown version, but
it's very strange to me. I think that this is a classic. The government is, you know, they're not really on top of technology. They're you know, where you could have a really powerful, flexible system, they're not taking advantage of that. They're using something that's a little bit more
ready to
locked
go
down. But Lieb said, this is the quote, give me one second.
That's okay. Not that I have anything to really add, but...
Everyone is clear that you can't load apps on your government laptop. You can't smoke cigarettes at work. You have to take a drug test, and you can't use a droid. That's the quote. So
that's weird.
Know, yeah, I don't know what that. I don't know what the deal is, but really, you know, if Apple doesn't win when it comes to the government, I don't know what they were doing, because as of now, they're pretty much the only smartphone that anybody's excited about. Yeah, so we'll see what happens over time.
Poor BlackBerry.
He's horrible news. And for BlackBerry, great news for you and I, because we predicted they would be
By the end of the year.
And it looks like everything is ticking along as planned. And then kind of exciting news. I actually think that this is super exciting. The news industry likes to pick up controversy and problems and tries to scare you to death, but I think this is nothing but good news. But it appears that Moore's Law is collapsing. Moore's Law, the law that...
Collapsing in the sense that it's no longer valid, or it's speeding up?
Yes. Okay. Correct. It's no longer valid. Moore was the co-founder of IBM. basically observed that the computing speed of computers was exponential. It was doubling every 18 months, which is very unique for a technology. Usually, technological and measurable technological improvements happen linearly, not exponentially. It's made the technology industry very exciting over the last 20 years and continuing to be more exciting. But one of the big problems is with silicone, which has been our medium for computing technology, is that it does have a limit. It can only get so thin, it can only get so small before different thermodynamic laws start to take over and quantum tunneling effects start to occur, and you're either pulling electricity so hard, so fast that you're melting the silicone, or you literally have electrons that are might be in the chip, or they might be out of the chip, or they might be in the wrong part of the chip because they're so small. And so it definitely weird stuff's going on. There are some moves that are, you know, stuff like the 3D chips and things that are all designed to really squeeze as much of the as much out of Moore's law when it comes to silicone as they can. There's a really good video in the article that we linked with Michio Kaku. I think I said his name wrong. I can't remember how to say his name. He's a great guy. He's a super smart physicist. Really good at explaining stuff. So basically, the era of silicone is coming to an end, which Wow. really is something that we've talked about on this show before, maybe not in depth, but there are other technologies that are coming next. And to me, that's what's so exciting. You know, it's like diamond chips are, you know, a new up and coming thing that, yeah, that definitely cool. has space to grow. And, same with silicone. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to cough really quick here.
Make it happen.
Let me wrap this up, man, so you can get to the next article. But you know, we're going to talk about this. Actually, I want to talk about this more later. So just go to the next article.
Cool beans. So Zynga has a new idea for Draw Something. So Draw Something, you know, it's the app where you draw stuff. You're given three options, and there are different difficulty settings, and you know, you gain points because you can, which gives you more colors. And I pretty much have the color palette I want now, so I could stop playing and be happy, except now I have the color palette, so I want to keep playing. So Zynga has this new ad idea for Draw Something, which I actually think is pretty creative. Instead of watching an ad for a brand, like after you draw something, what you will do is you will actually like draw a picture for that brand. So for example, instead of seeing like an ad for Nike, it might say draw the Nike swoosh, and so you would draw it, and so you're drawing the brand and thinking about it. And the way that they'll make money is that if a person chooses to draw that, you know, they actually select it as a choice, that's when that company or brand will get charged.
Nice.
It's actually pretty cool. I mean, as long as it's not like your three choices would be like Nike, McDonald's, and Reebok or something. So it might be interesting to be like Nike, Reebok, and Adidas. Who do you pick?
And, ooh, you know, that's an interesting one.
That would be fascinating. I don't know how you set them up with coins is important, so you'd have to randomize it to do it. But I don't know. It could be interesting, or it could be totally dumb. But I think it has the potential to be actually pretty cool.
And if their user base keeps growing like it had been growing, that'll be awesome for Zynga.
Yeah, if it does. what's your latest insight on that?
Foreshadowing. Oh, they lost 5 million users since they Zynga bought Draw Something.
Is that a lot? How many users total do they have, or did they have?
Oh, you're going to ask me to – I didn't write that down. I wasn't thinking.
Okay, they were at 15, and they're down to 10.
Yeah, so they lost a third of their audience.
That's a lot.
And it's huge. And everybody's balking like that. That was crazy. I can't believe that. You know, I can't believe Zynga bought on that way too soon. I actually think that's a little bit overblown. I think what happened was there was a real, I think OMG Pop they basically did the best thing they could, which was sell at the height of their popularity. I think a lot of people were trying it out because people were talking about it, mm-hmm. and a lot of people used it, And then realized, yeah, I don't have friends that are any good at this game or like playing it, so I'm gonna put it down. Like, you and me still play, but none of my other friends play. Or you got people who like just write out the word, and it just stops being fun. You
That's
know,
pretty
since it's
lame.
very much, since you can't just play against a computer who will always try its best to be a competitor, it's very much a social. It's a different type of game, and so I think the user base exploded temporarily, and it's died back down to reasonable levels,
Well, and
and
I
hopefully
think
it'll.
Zynga probably has a bunch of ideas to make it more engaging again. Because the problem is, like, it's kind of a co-opetition. You're not, you're playing with each other instead of competing against something, not trying to beat anybody. The points that you gain, honestly, their thresholds are ridiculously high in order to get new colors. I totally disagree with that. I don't know why they set it so high, but whatever.
Well,
It
because they
incentivized
want
me
you
to
to
keep
pay
playing.
money for
Yeah, well, I didn't. I played a lot,
them.
and which I guess they were still okay with because of the ads. But I guess they'll figure out ways to incorporate it into their other games and to advertise for it and to get people reinterested and do reminders and like I said, I think they'll figure it out and it'll be fine.
I don't think it's going to be the next big game, but it's still going to be a huge game and a decent revenue
I
stream,
think it's going to be like Words with Friends. There's going to be,
Right,
ups
exactly.
and downs and surges as people discover it, and you play it for a bit, and then you stop, and then someone new
Yeah,
discovers
you
it and
find.
finds their friends, and you do a couple more
Right.
rounds, and it's just,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah, if somebody were to challenge me all of a sudden, I would totally start playing with them, but. That's just it is, and that's the kind of game it is. So it's, I think it. I don't think it was a bad purchase by any means. I did want to draw this comparison really quickly. The whole like color palette, how many coins it takes to get your color palette, this feels an awful lot like being at Chuck E. Cheese as a kid, doesn't it? With their like 15,000 ticket prizes, it's just this is stupid. I'm never gonna get that. And they're like, yeah, that's the point. Oh. Dang
Yeah,
it.
they're pretty crazy. By the way, it's your turn. Do I need to nudge you again?
What?
It's your turn on Draw Something, man.
Oh, yeah. Good
That's
point.
right.
Yes. I thought you were talking about articles. I was
Oh,
like,
no.
dude, you got like four more articles
Nope,
before it's my turn. What are you talking about?
still my turn. So, LinkedIn has acquired or will be acquiring SlideShare. Have you ever used SlideShare?
Nope.
It's actually pretty cool. So, if you make a PowerPoint presentation, you can. Sorry for the sirens.
That's
If
all
you
right.
make a SlideShare, a PowerPoint presentation, you can upload it to SlideShare, and then it'll act like a regular slide that someone can click through. And you can also add audio to it to kind of, talk your way through it. You can embed it inside of other sites and. You can make them private, public, whatever, all sorts of cool stuff. I've used it a couple times. So LinkedIn, who is this, company or professional-focused website, social network, is purchasing a SlideShare, which is primarily used in the office, I would, guess. You don't see too many, like, personal PowerPoint presentations.
No, you really don't.
So it's cool that they got it. I really don't know what they have in mind for it. I've other than like I said, they have the same target audience. So we'll see where that goes. But I like where LinkedIn's headed, trying to put cool features together.
It's definitely something. I think it's what you saw with Facebook, and we've talked about with what could Facebook do to become even better? Become have more utilities. And right now, all LinkedIn really is as a professional network, which is good for what it is. But if you couldn't add some real technological innovations, some really become less about the social network and more about what technology you can bring to leverage that network. I think that that would definitely help them
Yeah, that
long term.
it would be genuinely cool. I think they have like a SlideShare widget thingy for your LinkedIn profile, I think. But it would also be neat to like you could share a presentation and it shows your bio and all your information there from LinkedIn, and if you upload something it automatically tells everybody else, "Hey, upload a new presentation, check it out." I don't know. There's it could be cool, I think.
Yeah, we'll see what they do.
So, Target this week got a little saucy. They're going to stop selling the Kindle in their stores. And
the best-selling Kindle Fires?
Yeah, those are the ones. And they didn't really, like, say why. They just kind of said, yeah, we're not going to do it anymore. And the reason they said was because of a conflict of interest.
Interesting.
And the very first one was everyone was like, oh, that's because they're going to start selling iPads and have, like, mini Apple stores inside Target. And it was like, no, that's not it.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense because have you ever walked into Best Buy?
yeah, exactly. No, their reason, which I think is a good one, is they don't want to be a showroom for Amazon.
Yeah.
Because basically, I've got to imagine what they found is that people go in, they check them out, and then they go home and buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, you just go, well, there it is. You know, that and Amazon's done stuff where they make those apps where it's like, go into the store, highlight a barcode, and we'll tell you how much cheaper you can get it on Amazon. They came out with that during the shopping holiday season. And I think Target's just kind of like, you guys are annoying. We hate you. We're not going to help you out anymore. You've gotten too big or something like that, too crazy. And, they're not just going to put up with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, and what is Amazon's stated goal is to become, you know, like Walmart or Target, but through your computer. You know, they want you to be able to buy anything anytime from the website. And let's face it, they're kicking Walmart and Target's butt. So I can definitely see where Target is getting the attention of, you know, these guys are our competitors, and we can't, you know, they're direct competitors with our entire business model. Mm-hmm. And really, they've got a huge strategic advantage over us because they've got, you know, they got a number of things going for them. No, number one, no brick and mortar stores, no, you know, much less overhead, a lot more mm-hmm. sell through, a lot bigger user base,
yep.
Brand loyalty, that sort of stuff. And so for Target, you know, I kind of believe that they're sitting there going, we really can't be their showroom. We can't be their brick and mortar store unless, you know, they're going to pay us like we're their brick and mortar store.
Right.
So that'll be interesting to see where that goes over time.
Mm-hmm. So Samsung revealed the new phone this week, the Galaxy S3. We're going to talk more about it later because it actually looks pretty darn sweet, and I want to dive more into that in a bit. So before that, did you know, or let me ask you this. Now you'll know the answer because it's written in the title. Did you know that 37% of internet users between the ages of 12 and 17 participate in regular video chats?
I did not know that.
You know, including, you know, Skype, Google Talk, iChat, that kind of stuff. And girls are more likely to do that than boys.
That makes a lot of sense. Intuitively.
27% of teens, 12 to 17, I don't know why 12 is a teen, but whatever, they have recorded and uploaded a video to the internet. And they said one major difference between now and 2006 is that girls are just as likely to do it as boys. Or I guess that wasn't true earlier.
Huh.
And then also, 13% of internet-using teens stream videos live on the internet. So, which is, you know, different.
How many?
13%, I guess.
Only 13 stream videos live?
Right. Whereas 37 will participate in a video chat, and 27% will upload video online.
How do they define live streaming video?
So something like Justin TV, Ustream.
Okay.
Kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I see. I get the distinction now. I was going to be like, what? But okay.
Yeah. So this was 800 teens were surveyed by the Pew Research Center's Internet and American Life Project. And that was what their results were. I like it because I think video conferencing is the wave of the future. And so more people doing it, the better. I wish it were a higher number, and it will probably be higher as life goes on. But
it's funny. It's weird. I definitely think I've heard a lot of people talking, you know, making casual references to, like, the Facebook chat, and more girls than guys, too, which is interesting because, you know, and I have the sense that it's younger people. Especially, okay, you know, in total, it's, you know, What am I saying?
I don't know. Something about Facebook chat and girls and being
It's just
popular.
this just I guess it's intuitively it just feels intuitively right to me. I can't, you know, I can't quite put a finger on why that seems right, but yeah, young people and mostly girls. But cool.
Yeah, so there you go. I think it's cool. So, I got one more and then it's your turn. Oh man, it's a
All right.
marathon. So, and I'm going to talk more about this one. Scott Thompson, who is Yahoo's CEO, who, by the way, is the one who took reins and started suing Facebook over some patent infringement that is kind of a joke. How's that glass of water, by the way? Is it
It's really
amazing?
good.
Cool.
Sorry about that.
Scott Thompson, Yahoo's CEO, who's suing Facebook, apparently lied on his resume. So here is a guy who is not making friends and at the same time manages to go off and do something completely boneheaded to set it all up. So not surprisingly, the sharks are swirling. You know, they're like off with his head, basically. He should be fired, as opposed to being like, well, you know, it's an understanding thing, it happens, whatever. But I'll talk more about the actual circumstance of how it happened. But apparently his computer science degree does not exist. So
Woo, that's
yeah,
exciting.
pretty tough. So we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so news result or news came out. This is pretty anecdotal. Nothing official from Verizon, but it's all, I guess it's all over different chats and different messaging boards and stuff. But this blog writer actually spent some time and went to 10 different Verizon or a couple different Verizon outlets and talk to different people online, basically trying to find out about buying a new phone, what he should buy. In half the cases, he said he was interested in a smartphone. In the other half of the cases, he said he was interested in the iPhone. When he said he was interested in the iPhone, he found that the salespeople were just like, okay, well, we can do that. But when he just said, I want a smartphone, they pushed really, 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 really hard for 4G Android phones. You know, really, really drove that message home. You know, you got to do this. And in all 10 cases, he eventually asked if you had to recommend something other than the iPhone, would you? And universally they said, yes, we would recommend you get a 4G Android phone, one of these models, over an iPhone for the reason of they don't have 4G. This is especially interesting considering the
Really?
fact that the iPhone 4S for Verizon has the highest user satisfaction rating of all of their phones. So it's clearly something that's not a you know it's so universal that it's clearly something that is it's Verizon corporate. They've decided that they want to move this direction. And you know we've been talking about the fact that you know clearly Verizon is pushing the whole 4G
Yeah,
thing.
but when you look at the sales data, that doesn't seem to be the case.
That they're pushing the 4G data.
Yeah, I mean, they might be pushing it, but customers aren't really
Well,
buying it.
yeah, I think that's the reason why they're starting to push it so aggressively is because they really want to move. You know, that was, you know, during CES this year, that was such a big thing for them. They were like, yes, every phone will be 4G LTE that comes out this year. And I think to them it's a real frustration that they're going to have to wait until October to get a LTE iPhone. Yes, that's right. I just made my prediction for when the iPhone 5 will come out this year, and I'm right, so, you know,
Yeah, we all know you're right. It's
just get
not a
on that
surprise.
bandwagon. Oh, there's so many stupid reports. They're gonna, will they announce it at the Worldwide Developer
No.
Conference? No. Anyways, back to the news. So this isn't really surprising given Verizon's current stance about 4G, but definitely, you know, just an interesting thing that, you know, if you're going into Verizon and you're not sure about what phone you want to get, just be prepared. And, you know, for them financially, you know, they've got huge reasons to get invested in 4G. And so they're definitely pushing that one hard.
That's well, and I know I have anecdotal evidence, so sample size of two, where I went into a store once just to, it was like almost a year ago, actually, and just goofing around, whatever. And it says Verizon had just recently gotten the iPhone. And the guy there, he like was almost vehemently against it. I mean, it was weird. And so I walked in and said, hey, I got an iPhone. Contract's coming up. You know, just looking to see what my options are. And then I was also comparing between AT&T and Verizon. So that was interesting. And, you know, so it was kind of a mixed thing. But he was very much loved the droids and said that or the Android devices. It might have been a droid at the time that he was pushing. But, you know, was not that awesome about he was like, eh, Apple's okay, you know, whatever. It's fine if you're into, you know, being shackled for life. And I was like, oh,
jeez. Okay. Oh,
and, you know, so he had that. And then I know of another guy where he walked in, he was going to get an iPhone from Verizon. And by the time he left, he walked out with an Android device because they pushed him so hard to not get an iPhone that he ended up going with an Android device. And was kind of like, it was weird. At the end, he was like, I don't know if I made the right decision or not.
Yeah.
Which I thought was weird. It was like, why'd you let him talk you into it? Just walk away, man. Come back another day. You know, get some, you know, breathe a little bit. If you're going to make a big choice like that, you're stuck with this thing for 2 years. You don't have to buy it in a single sitting. So I thought that was weird. So, I mean, they've been pushing for a while. I don't think this is necessarily anything new.
Yeah. No, it's not. And it just, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see once, you know, if that changes at all. You know, if they – but they definitely – they don't – they've never been a big fan of Apple's attitude. I think it – in a lot of ways it directly conflicts with their kind of – their attitude is the gatekeeper.
Well, they have so a similar one as Apple, right? They want to control everything and control the experience because they believe that they can do a better job delivering it if they do. And which is, you know, you would think I just said that for Apple. And so that's
well, you know, yeah. And from a customer satisfaction perspective, you know, Verizon's got the best in the nation, so maybe they're not wrong.
Yeah, true.
I know. So, I don't know. Interesting. All right, cool. That was Friday, or Thursday, Friday. Yeah, we already went over the draw something hemorrhage in users. So the another one that came up on Friday, big interview, very long interview with Clay Christensen. He was the author of The Innovator's Dilemma, which was a book that Steve Jobs said was deeply influenced him. So this dude is
really wow.
Yeah. So this is a dude who knows what he's talking about, and you know, the genius's respect. Basically, he sat down and said, "I'm concerned about Apple," in this interview, and I'll boil it down for you really quickly because I'm shocked that it's not more. He didn't really bring up anything new. It was a long interview, but what he said basically is his worries come down to two things. Number one, Apple right now feels very much like a Sony during their heyday, where they're coming out like during the Walkman years, where they're coming out with TVs and Walkmans and computers, and they're just coming out with one device after another that don't have any overlay. And at some point, the fact that they've got all these huge cash streams that they don't want to conflict with each other started to become difficult. And early Sony, if you know the history of early Sony, when their radios became super popular and they were selling the best in the world, the owners, the CEO said, or of Sony said, we feel that we are getting too dedicated to radios. We're losing our innovative edge, and so. To kind of motivate everybody, we know that we're the world's leader seller in radio technology, and we're not going to sell radios anymore, which everybody, you know, flipped their lid. But the end result was, you know, obviously, the Walkman and their TVs and their computers and PlayStation and everything else. So it was a great move, but...
So what would you get rid of if you were Apple? You know, what's he like? No, here's what they need to drop. I mean, is he like get rid of the iPods and just move on? Or I mean, I feel like they're still selling them, but they're definitely not innovating on, you know, spending time.
So
on them.
So the interview actually pointed out the argument of, well, Apple let the iPhone and iPod cannibalize he let the iPhone and iPod Touch cannibalize the iPods.
Right.
And he conceded that that was a good point. They did do that. But what his argument was is that they're definitely in a danger zone, especially without Steve Jobs now, to kind of make those calls where they might protect something and really allow an outside innovator to move in because they don't want to. It's just a danger thing. And the other thing that he said
is, like,
you know,
music streaming could potentially be a huge disruption.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, TV streaming, I think, is going to be a huge thing. And you know, Apple's entire media setup so far is, you know, single serve but, you know, a la carte buying of TV shows and stuff and holding on to them and downloading them. You know, and I think that's going to change over time. I'm not but the other thing that he said that they're vulnerable to is basically the integrated closed approach. You know, he said that, you know, right now, obviously it's working for them, but the fact that how he described it is companies like Google are modular. They have all these different things that they're working on that are really discrete things that work with other services. You know, and Apple doesn't take that approach, which means that if somebody were to come in and really just, you know, let's say Microsoft comes out with a better tablet and is just decidedly better, you know, and they start outselling the iPad, that could really spell doom for the entire ecosystem.
Okay.
And it's a real weakness for Apple.
Makes
sense. I thought was interesting.
If one wins, everybody wins. If one loses, they all lose.
Right. So that's his well, and I guess more to his point was that you can't, when you get so integrated and so tight and you don't play well with anybody else, all you need is one to lose really, really bad, and it could actually bring down the whole structure.
Well, it makes sense. And, you know, honestly, you look at the way that the internet has worked in the past, it starts off like crazy Wild West open, and then someone comes along and pulls it all together, you know, which was AOL at the time, and says, here's a nice, pretty closed environment for you. And it really takes off, really makes massive adoption, or leads to mass adoption. And then eventually over time, that closed system loses out to more open systems because they have time to develop and they're just plain better because they're not stuck in this closed system. They're not, you know, using this guy's language. You know, they don't feel like they have to give up any cash cows or stuff. They can just create cool stuff. And, you know, and so we've seen that. And I think we're seeing that with social where – you know, it started out where, like, there really wasn't much. I mean, super Wild West, like, comment systems were all individual. They were different. There was no integration whatsoever. You saw, I mean, even MySpace had this feel of Wild Westness to it. You know, anything goes. Have fun. And, you know, and then Facebook came along and said, no. We're going to close down this entire thing. We're going to make it pretty beautiful. And they sent it all mainstream because that's what people loved. And I guarantee you over time, it's going to open up and become more distributed again, just like we've seen with the internet. Now, AOL did not figure out a way to play nicely in this new open world. We'll see if Facebook is smart enough to slowly open up themselves to everybody else and let themselves become distributed. You know, if they can figure out a revenue stream to go with that, that's, you know, that'll be it. And I definitely think that there's the same thing going on with mobile where, yeah, there were these smartphones, but
hey, James, can I cut you off? I know you're, like, in the middle of a thought, but, like, you're definitely stealing my topic that, you know, I wanted to get dive deep into after all the articles. I'd love to talk about this more, but I'm just going to wrap up these two last articles, okay?
Sorry.
Well,
I had a great thought. So, anyways,
go ahead. I know. Yeah, I'll let you come back to it.
Go ahead.
No, it's cool. Because they're very related. They, you know, okay. Google had to pay. Google's currently in talks with the FCC, not the FCA. The FCC, they violated user securities on the iPhone and Safari by putting cookies on the iPhone even when you weren't supposed to. They used some crazy bypass. They're going to pay $10 million. It's a pittance, but it's a fine. $10 million. And also the other big one, and we will wrap back around this one as well. So I'll just really quickly go into it. AT&T's biggest regret was unlimited data, and they're also freaked out by Skype and iMessage. And this is from the AT&T CEO saying he's losing sleep over it. So what everybody has been talking about all along, you know, saying that we think this is the direction we're going, and the speculation that this is going to be a problem for the telecoms, it definitely isn't just maybe a problem that they might be thinking about.
Good.
They're actually freaking out about it, which, yeah, is exciting. So let's wrap back around that
one. Well, all they're going to do is they're going to charge more for data and make up that way. But, yeah, we could talk more about that.
Okay. So, Father of Disruption. So, okay. Yeah, you were in the middle of saying, I know I cut you off totally bad there, but you were in the middle of saying, talking about mobile, and this is why this is important, why I wanted to cut you off there, because the article, just as a recap, was the prediction that Google and Facebook will die in the next 5 to 8 years because they can't keep up with mobile. So where they are modular now, and like you said, some companies like AOL couldn't keep up, Google and Facebook may be better prepared to, and I want to hear your reasoning on that.
Yeah, so I guess the... Can I finish my thought, or is that...
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So the final thought was to say mobile phones have reached this point where, you know, Apple in 2007 came out and said, hey, here's something, a closed system, amazing, really woke the world to it. And, you know, in some ways, I know Android's more open, but it's very, like, it's, you know, polished and... You know, it looks nice, and it's kind of weird how everything seems to be going faster in the mobile world. But I could definitely see in the future where it's going to turn more open, and it's just going to be a cleaner version of open, I think. And there's always this ebb and flow of that. So in regards specifically to Facebook and Google, how they might be gone in 5 to 8 years, I think that's a joke, personally.
Well.
I mean,
yeah.
Facebook, they made another acquisition, what was it, Friday, of another mobile company. So they're clearly aware of what's going on. And at least right now, they have the money and are willing to spend the money to try to find those companies to help them to survive in the mobile age. And, I mean, they've come out and said, mobile's the future. We need to play there, which is true. Which is surprising how bad their mobile app is, but, you know, whatever.
It was funny, I was going to bring up the point, and we talked about this a little bit before, and I become more and more convinced of this every time we talk about it, is this idea that, you know, the modular approach to apps is really the best route. You know, we got, you know, I said, I think the best thing Facebook did from their app perspective was to break out their Facebook Messenger from the Facebook app. And I have both apps, I have them both in the same folder, and I use both of them, and it's great to not have to slog through Facebook in order to get to the messengers. It's much quicker, snappier app when they're, both of them are faster and snappier when they're separate. And I definitely love the idea of, you know, Instagram becoming basically Facebook's photo app on your iPhone. To me, that, or something similar, you know. But I could really, you know, and this is just me personally, but I could have an entire folder devoted to different Facebook apps, you know, from the main app to my profile page to, you know, this and that, and things that are closely integrated with the system and integrated with other apps, but are much quicker and faster on their own. I think it's definitely an approach that Google has taken, you know, within the Android app, within their Android. You know, it's like all of your different services are different modular components, which I think is interesting. You know, like you said, still in the language of this guy, you know, this idea that they have all these discrete services that they've, yeah, they bring them together under one website online. But I think in the mobile, and I think people are really starting to wake up to this, is that we like each thing to have its own little app icon, you know, even if they're all kind of closely associated. We really want to be able to do one thing at a time quickly. And it's sort of a limitation of the hardware, or I deeply believe it's a limitation of the hardware. If it could do everything really fast, well, yeah, I'd literally want one app that could do everything. But that's a terrible app design because you don't have a device that can do that. It's like, it's funny. You know, one of the things that Reddit does is that they, the website has a lot of different subreddits or subcategories for different, you know, things that you can look at. And I've found that what I've actually done is for the ones that I traffic the most, I actually have different app, you know, you know how on your iPhone you can have your, you can have web pages as icons on your, on your home screen. I actually have multiple. Each subreddit has its own icon, because it, you know, there are certain pages that I want to go to, and I don't want to have to navigate through the site to get to these other subreddits. So I just quickly, you know, and I think that, you know, for Facebook, they're waking up to that strategy, and also the diversification of their brand. That not everything has to be a Facebook brand. It's something that, you know, Google is going through as well. You know, not everything has to be Google this or Google that, or, you know, it's, you know, Chrome, YouTube, mm-hmm. you know, Google Plus and Google are a little bit different, but, and, you know, maybe we'll have the color scheme, but, you know, I think that that's something that's strong for those two different companies, and it's the right attitude, and it's going to help them in the long run, you know, survive into the next coming age. But yeah, I actually picked the article because I disagreed with it. I just thought it brought up an interesting, you know, especially in contrast to the other article about, you know, Apple's weaknesses. You know, there's like you said, there's something to be said about that ebb and flow of, companies that go from, you know, closed, everything has to be tight and closely integrated, to an opening up of, we're going to let anything go and everything, you know, and you kind of have to get focused sometimes, really clean it up, and then slowly open it up and mm-hmm. bring the innovation back in. And, you know, it's an exciting time to be watching these things happen. You know? So,
yeah, no, I totally agree. Speaking of exciting things, you might have to check your Hangout to make sure it's not falling asleep on you.
Oh, probably. Oh, definitely has.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. No, I agree with you 100%.
Cool. Well, I'm glad we're in agreement on that.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah. I'm going to have to work on my interrupting you in the middle of a thought, because I think that could have been less awkward.
I was just like, man, if looks could kill, man. I was just like, what are you doing? I was about to hit the crescendo.
I felt bad as soon as I did it. I was just like, I saw these last two articles and I was like, oh, so we try so hard to have good flow and things happen naturally and organically. And I just totally... Wait a second, James. You messed up my flow right in the middle of your flow. It's payback.
That's all right.
Anyways, all right.
That's okay. So do you have any more thoughts on the Moore's Law collapsing?
Yeah, definitely. So it sounds like we've got at least another decade of exponential growth, so get excited. Mobile's going to make it through,
man,
like a piece of cake. Now, what's cool about this is that the company I work for, we build automated furnaces for cooking silicone wafers, and silicone wafers are obviously what they use to make chips. So, kind of a big deal to the industry I'm in, that we might have to move away from silicone. But one of the things that was interesting about what they brought up was, you know, where we're going. There's all sorts of different things that you can use. One of the, like I had mentioned, you know, diamond, growing diamond and doping the diamonds as they become wafers, and using that, they can get a lot hotter, a lot smaller. This is all a size limitation type thing. But what comes next after that, you know, is there's all sorts of different, like, we're talking about molecular, you know, processors that can work on molecular size.
Wow.
Or building quantum computers, and the sort of mechanical things that they can do on incredibly small scale. So there's definitely going to come a point, and definitely, you know, in the next couple of years, where companies like IBM, or not IBM, sorry, Intel, are gonna get to the edge of what they can do. Literally, they can't move any further. And their researchers are going to turn fully devoted to two things. One will be to squeeze out those last few drops of innovation and moving forward that they can do mm-hmm. with silicon, and the other direction will be getting crazy with new technologies. Like, let's anything. We just need anything. Just give us something. I don't care if it's expensive or nuts. It just needs to be faster. Just give me anything faster. If it's reliable and it's faster, we'll do it.
Well, that expense will be an interesting issue.
Right. But I think that at first, though, you're going to see incredibly expensive devices that are going to be very awkward and probably even cumbersome, but they'll be ridiculously fast. And you know, this is, but we're coming up to a point where we're going to need a real breakthrough. You know, the crazy part about Moore's law is that it really has, in large degree, only relied on incremental improvements and very, very rapid incremental improvements, to the effect where it actually feels like large jumps. But really, it's the same basic technology. You're just making the silicon transistors smaller and smaller and smaller. But now we really need something new, and there's an unbelievable amount of money, you know, and one of the things that, you know, is true about technology is that technology doesn't, evolve organically on its own. It doesn't, come out of a vacuum. We get the technology that we invest in, to a large degree. And so, we have gotten better silicone technology because we have invested in silicone technology, and now we're getting to the point where it can't get any better, but there's still a huge amount of money, and so they're going to, you know, companies are going to start really looking towards what's the next big thing. And the really fun part about it, not only is that it's like, it's not just an Intel deal, it's, you know, Microsoft is going to work on, you know, how can we process data better and faster? Apple's going to, you know, focus on how can we do more with less. And there's a lot of those types of technological advances that we're going to start seeing cropping up in the next 10 years, I believe, until eventually we hit that real breakthrough. And there are people that think that breakthrough might not come for another 50 years, which would be, you know, a fascinating thing to watch as speed and size kind of stagnates, you know, what do we do then? or at least development becomes linear again, and not exponential. But I don't know, it's all very fascinating. There's still a tremendous amount of engineering to be done to move forward. But I think, you know, it's exciting to see physicists sitting down and saying, you know, this isn't like oil where we're like, you know, we think we have this much oil, and then we find another lake of oil. We're like, oh, okay. Well, maybe we have another 50 years of oil. You know, this is definitely one of those. We're coming up against a hard wall. You know, we're coming up against this. We're really coming up against the speed of light. You know, in large degree, where it's like, you know, you just can't get smaller than what we're doing. We've really gotten to the very edge of what physics will allow on this one, which is really cool and really exciting, and I definitely am very enthusiastic to see what crazy nonsense we come up with next.
But yeah, totally. It is pretty exciting. It's pretty crazy to think that we're reaching the end.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the cool thing about silicone is that it's used for so many different things that, you know, there's no way, you know, silicone's still going to be a huge industry for the next 50 years, just because it's used in almost everything, and almost all computers, you know, that you ever interact with don't use cutting edge, you know, the smallest, you know, chipsets. You're talking really, really high-end computers. So it could take another 20 years before, you know, general consumers even start to feel the crunch because we lag behind what the most advanced computers are. And sure. then it's like, you know, and your cell phone, or not your cell phone, actually, it's a terrible example, but your alarm clock lags 50 years behind where we're, you know, the rest of technology. So it's really, you know, it's one of those things where there's a huge amount of stuff, you know, everyday computing. And, you know, going back to what we talked about last week, you know, where I believe now that we've kind of centralized everything into single devices, now it's connecting your world. That's really our next big thing, putting computer chips in everything. Those can still be silicone. There's no reason why that can't happen, because those don't require super powerful computers built into them. But, you know, super powerful computers, we're, you know, in the next decade, we're gonna run out of what we can do with that. You know. Well, it's fascinating. It'll be really exciting to watch as people move forward, how we as a humanity innovate technology past that, you know, something we become so reliant on.
Yeah.
So, speaking of new cell phones in the future,
speaking of,
give me some love on this one.
Yeah, okay. So Samsung has revealed their new Galaxy S Trace. And I think the easiest way to do it is to play this video that they have of this guy kind of walking through it.
Okay.
And it's very much into, like, nature, you know, being natural.
Is it?
So I'm gonna play this. Hopefully it'll be loud enough. I don't know. I'll have to go through my mic.
We'd like to introduce the Galaxy S3, our new smartphone.
Can you hear that?
Designed for humans and inspired by nature.
There we go.
Let's start with design. Samsung Galaxy S3 mimics the beauty of nature. It creates the natural curves of leaves and pebbles.
Kind
of
corny, but...
Also,
the device looks pretty cool. Screen,
it manages to fit perfectly in
your So, 4.8-inch screen.
The Galaxy S3 will come in two colors. Marble white and pebble blue.
Blue and white.
Each color makes a unique natural statement of its own.
Oh, I love
it. The user interface is inspired by nature.
When you touch it, it's like glass, like water droplets.
And infused with nature and human emotion.
Nice.
Human emotion has been infused in it.
Take a look at this lock screen. When you touch the screen, you can see the water ripple and hear the sound of real water drop.
It's natural.
It's just like nature. It's virtually nature.
Ooh, that's a ringtone. I like it.
I feel like I'm on a cloud.
Now, let's talk a little bit about hardware.
Yeah.
As you can see, the screens are very quick to switch.
It actually looks pretty fast.
Compared to the Galaxy S2, booting time is much shorter. Applications are launched quicker. And web browsing is also faster.
It looks really fast.
Let us introduce the unique pop-up play feature.
So this is kind of cool. It's like a...
If you get a text message while you're watching a movie, simply use pop-up play. You can move the screen around.
It's like a little mini screen of the movie on your phone now.
That's cool. I like that.
It like hovers on top of everything.
I like that a lot. But that's because I don't have enough patience and focus to actually watch a movie anymore.
To go back to the
video, I have to be able to do other stuff. It's kind of sad.
Great, isn't it?
It is great.
It's great.
The Galaxy S3 has a high-performance camera. You can instantly capture and share your special moments. It shoots images without any shutter lag. The bird shot feature lets you take up to 20 photos consecutively.
Whoa.
And this guy just does it. You just hold it down and it just goes.
And the best photo feature automatically recommends the best.
Her dad's camera does that too.
That's true. I don't think the iPhone does that.
No, it doesn't.
I never tried.
Well, let me try. Let me see here.
Direct call. When you view a text message,
this is cool.
And you want to call the person right away, just bring the phone up to your ear. The Galaxy S3 will automatically make a call for you.
Boom. Done.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, Facebook. Apple needs to get on that. That's cool.
To share the photos with other Galaxy S3 devices,
this is
use
cool.
The S Pen feature. S-Beam allows you to send video, music, and images in any size.
It's NFC.
S-Beam simply touch the back of two Galaxy S3
what?
Phones.
Jess, what is it?
It's their S-Beam.
Near field communication.
Immediately shared.
If you take two phones, put them back to back, you can share stuff. Isn't that wonderful?
That's cool.
Yes.
It is wonderful.
Again, the Samsung Galaxy S3 is a smartphone. Effortlessly smart and intuitively simple. Enjoy the maximum benefits of the latest smartphone features with the Galaxy S3.
All right. So that's the video of it. And I mean, it generally, it looks pretty awesome. It's got a, you know, 4 quad core, amazing processor, whatever, you know, it's fast.
4 quad core.
Yeah. It's got the big HD screen, which, like I said, it's, or like the video said, it's 4.8 inches and it fits perfectly in your hand. It looks a little big to be perfect, but, you know, whatever. And that that camera is an 8 megapixel camera.
Nice.
So, you know, so it's good. And it's running Ice Cream Sandwich, which is also nice. And I don't know, pretty much talked about most of the benefits there. It looks, it honestly looks like a very cool phone. They don't mention anything about battery life on there, but, you know, I'm sure that it's just as good as the others.
You know, and it's funny. Obviously, the Galaxy S's are the best-selling phones right now. They're kicking everybody's butt. Everybody really likes them. But unfortunately, when you get and by everybody's, I mean everybody's but Apple's. but within the Android universe, they're definitely the king of the hill right now. The only problem with being the king of the hill is you get held to a higher standard. So I didn't link this article because I didn't realize you were going to have this one, but. I guess Friday, somebody said, like, compiled the first set of reviews, and, like, yeah, the jury's coming in. Samsung Galaxy S3 is not doing well.
Really?
yeah, which I think is fascinating, because, I really do think it just comes down to it's a, you know, you're king of the hill, people are going to expect more.
Huh. Well, I think it looks cool.
Yeah, I thought it looked nice, too.
Yeah. I would if I were to have an Android phone, I would definitely, it would be in my consideration set. No doubt,
you know,
about it.
And you know, I think Keegan, the guy we had on a couple weeks back, he's a really, really big fan of those, of the Galaxies, and so I, you know, yeah, like you said, if I were gonna go Android, that's probably the direction I would go. They don't get much higher praise.
Yeah, no, they look cool. I like the things that they can do with it, for sure. Yeah,
definitely.
They're becoming more refined, I think, is maybe the word I'm looking for. But they're neat. So, let's talk a little bit more about Yahoo.
Yeah, I want to hear about this.
Or Yahoo. So, okay, so Scott Thompson, CEO of Yahoo, once again, he lied about receiving his computer science degree.
What's cool? Did they give any data about that? Like, was that just an out-and-out fabrication, or did he actually attend a school and just got, you know, didn't make it through the last semester? Did they give any information about that?
Let's see here. What is... They had to somewhere. Not the one that I read, but... let's see here. Business Insider... Here is the Scott Thompson's PayPal bio. He is president of PayPal. Prior to PayPal, he worked for him. Let's see. He was, in addition, he worked for Coopers and Librand, delivering information technology solutions. Well, that's not it. Oh, here we go. Scott received a bachelor's degree in accounting and computer science from Stonehill College. It's literally the last line in his bio.
Okay. That's all it says.
So what happened here? So here's what happened. He was president of PayPal. Okay, great.
Yeah.
On his website bio for PayPal, it mentioned this computer science degree from Stonehill College. However, in the SEC filings, there was no such mention of his CS degree from Stonehill College. Okay? No big deal.
Okay.
Moves on to Yahoo. It's almost like a cut and paste from this, and it looks like they took the honors of putting that into the SEC documents as well.
Ooh.
Yeah, so, I mean, honestly, it's like one of those, okay, so he lied.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
And so basically they got called on it. It was an investor who was not happy with what he's doing right now, like caught it or something like that. And so he called him out and was like, dude, fix this. And Yahoo's PR pretty much came out and said, oh, it was a mistake, an inadvertent error. Our bad.
And you claim to have a CS degree.
Well, and they sit there and go, this is, it's not like, what? It's been on his PayPal thing for how long? I just wonder if it's like one of those, they added it and he just was like, never said anything. And
well,
I don't know.
Can I give you my theory?
Sure.
Okay, this is my theory. And the reason why I have this theory is because I want to give as little information about this as possible.
Okay.
Not male, female. I don't want to give away anything like that. I have a friend.
Uh-huh.
This friend of mine attended a college to get their CS degree. They made it through all the years except for the last semester when they were no longer financially able to pay for it.
Okay.
And did not finish the last semester. Brilliant, really, really smart person. But didn't actually graduate. The problem is that you can't get a job. So this person just kind of wagered that they could, you know, they would be judged by their performance and not by whether or not they actually graduated, whether they have a degree or not. And has been working as an engineer with a degree in computer science for some time now. you know, and not that I agree with what they're doing, but it's, you know, it's really none of my business outside of the fact that I know it, which is why I'm trying to be so careful about. But my point was, you know, it's one of those things where I can see it very easily happen, and it's so easy where you feel like you're in the middle of a rock and a hard place, you know. It's very possible that he took a tremendous amount of computer science classes. He got to, you know, and economics classes. It got to the end of it, and it's just like he ran out of time and money and just said, I only have enough time to get one degree. And so he got the one degree because he didn't have the degree in CS, even though he had the background, really smart guy, knew his stuff. He couldn't get a job in the field that he wanted, and so he just kind of, you know, fudged it once. And for whatever reason, when it came to the SEC filings, he was on top of it enough to say, how about you not mention the CS degree for stuff that, you know, I can be tried for, you know, lying to the government on. And, you know, it's possible that he just sort of snuck that one in. Maybe a really close confidant knew, but nobody really realized that. They probably thought that if there was a mistake, the mistake was we accidentally left it off of the SEC filings, not, oh, this guy doesn't have a CS degree. But it's one of those things where, you know, if the guy's brilliant, you don't really care that much. It's not, I mean, it's just not, you know, it's one of those things where you, at some point, I think you rightly so are judged by your accomplishments. The problem that he had is that once he kind of was on this lie, you know, you can't exactly, you know, at what point are you supposed to tell somebody, oh, by the way, I was lying about my degree, you know, and in that, you know, that's the inherent problem of lying.
So the big question, though, is what do you do about this?
That's,
you know,
tough.
A lot of people are saying, like, you know, you got to have integrity. You need to, like, for example, Yahoo actually has this 24-hour integrity hotline that you can call if you see something awry. And so this one blogger, he actually called him to let them know.
That's awful.
And you know, but it's like, what do you do? Most people are saying, like, he should be fired. He should be, you know, off with his head, literally get rid of him. I know with HP, we have a standard. It has a standard of business conduct. And that was their whole thing for letting Mark Hurd go, was he lied about some expense report thingy was what they technically got him on, and was like, all right, dude, you're out. And you're at the highest office. You're held to the highest standard of all of us. And
okay, done. So you made an interesting comment there. You said, he lied on this expense report, and that was what they got him for. And, you know, I don't know if it was just the language you said and it was an accident, but it definitely implies what you know, it's like with the mafia bosses that got busted, you know, went to jail with life with no parole because they cheated on their taxes. That's not why they went to jail for life with no parole. That was just all the government could prove, and so they got the, you know, absolute harshest sentence. So my question is, were they already hunting for Mark Hurd, trying to say, hey, man, it's time for you to go, and they just finally found something? Or is that a, man, I can't believe this. Like, he's the greatest thing that's ever happened to this company. We're making more money than ever. But, you know, he lied on his expense report. So I guess we have to let him go.
Well, from what I understood, was HP at the time, the stock prices was pretty darn high, and it was making a lot of money. But from what I could tell, the board of directors did not like the way that he was doing it. And were quasi-semi looking for ways, an excuse to get rid of him. And then he started down this whole, it was not an affair, but, you know, relationship with this lady, and which, again, they weren't too crazy about that he was doing it. And it was with this lady that these expense reports came up. And that was where they were just like, you know what, this entire situation stinks. We don't like where it's going, and we're not even going to kind of defend you. You know, it was just kind of like, no, right, you're done. And, I mean, it was like they fired him, as opposed to this, where it's like, okay, we're going to go talk and figure out what our next move is. I mean, it was literally they came out and said, Mark Hurd is fired as of tomorrow. He has a week CEO, to pack his bag. So, you know, that was
– This Yahoo – that works really well. This Yahoo, the Yahoo CEO, he just started like a month ago.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I mean, he's like, you know, yeah, he's very new.
Right. You know, I can definitely, I have a feeling that it's like basically what happened is, you know, the new guy comes in, he starts changing things. People don't like it because it's different. You know, he's got a controversial lawsuit with Facebook. Everybody thinks he's nuts. Maybe rightfully so. Maybe he is an awful at the job. But it definitely seems to me that this is the sort of thing that, you know, if things are great and you have the confidence in the backing of your board of directors, yeah, stay around for it. if you've already lost the confidence of your board of directors in the first few months, yeah, you're going to get fired, you know, and, you know, right or wrong, I guess, not knowing any of the backstory, I put my own experience behind him, and so I'm a little bit more compassionate for the situation he's in. Not that I agree with it, not that I think he did the right thing, but at least I can, like, you know, it tugs at my heartstrings ever so slightly, because I can imagine, you know, that where you could come into that situation and especially as a board of directors, like I said, if you're judging somebody by their success and their ability to make the company, and you realize that you're right on, you know, you're on the edge of a knife here, you know, you're really, this is make it or break it. Yahoo can be done in the next 5 years. It can be just, you know, a bookmark in, or a footnote, you know, in the most obscure of history books. Or you could have, you know, potentially a renaissance and a continuing of the company, you know, and largely depending on your CEO that you picked. And if you picked a guy that you thought was crazy and you know, but had the right kind of crazy that could make the difference, and you could have, you know, you just saw what Steve Jobs did in a decade with Apple, and you're thinking, who knows? You know, we just got to find somebody who can dream bigger. You know, and if that's your case, you sit there and go, whatever.
Right.
Okay, he didn't get his degree. Does that really matter? You know, is that, are we hiring him because he has a piece of paper, or are we hiring him because he's a genius? You know, and if that's your conversation, Well, yeah, obviously I don't think he gets fired. But if the conversation is, you know, it was kind of a mistake to hire him in the first place, I'm immediately regretting this decision, and he's giving us the perfect opportunity to no longer have him. You know, because like you said, it's not about the piece of paper. It's about the integrity. It's about the results. It's about the, you know, it's funny. The degree is almost inconsequential at this point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is to me, that's what's fascinating about the conversation, you know, but he, you know, that it is such a small matter, but I think that, you know, you're just, and I think they're going to give him another chance. I think they're going to go to the SEC and they're going to be like, okay, so he doesn't have a degree. And the SEC is just going to shake their heads and be like, well, we've seen more horrible things happen, so we're not even going to judge you for this one. You know, I get the feeling that this one's just going to kind of go unnoticed, but he's going to be on a super short leash. You know, if good things don't happen, right, start to happen at Yahoo, and in a big way, it's going to be terrible. You know, this is just one more along the list of, hey, you know, you gotta get better. But really and truly, you know, if he can sit there and he can tell them, you know, this is a lie I started 20 years ago. It was the dumbest lie I ever told, and I realized it was a mistake 5 years in. But, you know, when do you fix that sort of thing? Because now everybody knows. Like, it's just – and it just seems so harmless. And, like, you know, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have and if he goes to the board and says that, you know, and that's the case, you know, it's just a dumb mistake he made fresh out of college trying to get a job, that he, you know, he just never could figure out how to wiggle his way out of, you know, and now I got caught, you know, and you know, it was dumb. I shouldn't have done. I'm sorry. You know, and like I said, you can judge somebody however you want, you know, based on that. Like, that's, and I'm not trying to say that that's okay. I really am not. I'm just saying, I could definitely see how the board of directors would be like, well, I've told dumber lies, so I'll let it go.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a, in some ways it's very straightforward, and in others it's a very tricky issue, because you got employee morale that you're dealing with right now, and you know, and honestly, they're doing this thing with Facebook, and that the rest of the tech community is not a fan of. You know, there's a lot going against him right now. Yeah. You know, he is brand new as well, and he hasn't done anything remarkable. And lying is wrong. I don't care when you do it.
And
there's consequences for it. And so, you know, he's got to deal with that too. Does that mean he should be fired? Probably not. But there should be some form of a consequence there, would be my thing. Otherwise, man, I got a CS degree too. You know, why not?
Right. Yeah.
Jeez.
You know, unfortunately, the world's not, you know, I, as much as I'd like to see some form of justice, I also recognize the world's not fair, and he's not necessarily going to have any punishment for it. You know, he might be viewed as just, well, I think the punishment is that he's not going to turn Yahoo around, because let's be real, it's not going to happen.
Right.
He is not Steve Jobs.
Well, and I think this is just one more thing where the tech community is not going to like him, and anything that he does, they are going to be extremely biased, and he's not going to have to just turn them around. He's going to have to start kicking butt mega, and even then they'll begrudgingly give him it.
Right, and it will always taint his legacy.
Yep.
It will always be part of his, you know, the liar. You know, I think justice will come. It's just, you know, it might not be financial. It might not even be his job. It's just, but it probably will be. Let's be, you know.
Well, and I mean, it's the kind of thing, too, where it's like the Patriots, you know, whatever, that one year that they lost their final game. You know, and it came out a little earlier that, you know, they had been spying on other team stuff. And I mean, and it was kind of like, it was, what they were doing was innocuous. You know, it wasn't like they were that, it wasn't that big of a deal from a competitive standpoint, but man, it tainted the entire thing. And I mean, it was, even if they had won, there would have been that asterisk. And even if there isn't an official asterisk, you're going to get the offhanded comment anytime it comes up, and you go, well, there he is. You know, that's
It's so funny because I know personally that I, you know, like you said, I mean, to bring that, you know, it was 2008 Giants versus the Patriots, in case anybody's wondering what we're actually talking about. Yeah, I know that for that game I was rooting hardcore in the favor of the Giants because the Patriots had cheated, and I don't want them to have the undefeated season.
That was probably the best season in a really long time.
That game was
amazing. The build up to it was amazing. But anyways, off track. We roll.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, you know, I think ultimately, the truth is that it's, you know, he's the captain of a sinking ship, and I don't think he's going to, you know, they have already hit the iceberg. I don't actually think they're going to make it back to port. I don't care who the captain is, and I think this is just going to lead to his quicker and more depressing eventual removal from the position. Yep. I just don't think it'll happen right away.
Okay. Cool.
Yep. So. Yeah.
So, anything else you want to talk about?
Oh. Well, just I don't know. I did want to talk about the AT&T biggest regret versus, you know, Skype and iMessage, but your comment of, you know, I was like, we could talk about it. I know we talk about this a lot, but then you made the comment of, well, they're just going to charge more for data eventually. Like, yeah, that really is the it's really the conclusion we come to every single time. So,
well, I mean, it's like comparison to that one. Well, you could tell he's thinking about it. He goes, man, you know, that unlimited data plan, that was a bad idea. And we're afraid of iMessage and Skype. How do we solve this problem?
Yeah. How do these things come together? Well, my favorite part about the talk, I guess his, like, thing was, the thing he said was, I think our biggest mistake, all right, this is the only thing I wanted to extra
sure.
detail I want to mention. He was like, I think our biggest mistake was unlimited data. And the reason why I think it was such a big mistake is because it forces the light users to subsidize the heavy users. I was just like, oh, that's very compassionate of you to be concerned for the light users. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the fact that you basically have to give away, you know, a tremendous amount of data for free, you know, by your standards. And you just sit there and go, geez, you guys are bad. You know, but it was what they did was they set a level and a price, and, you know, they can never charge, you know, until they get rid of the unlimited data at whatever they're charging right now. You know, until they get rid of that, they can't start to raise the prices and start messing with data caps because everything is judged against that.
Right.
You know, which is really, as far as they're concerned, that's horrible. That's terrible news. But the really fascinating part about it to me is that it's, you know, this is the first time where, you know, it's not just the echo chamber saying they should be worried about this, but they've got a plan. No, they don't have a plan outside of we got to figure out how to convince everybody to get off of this service so that we can start raising the prices.
Yeah, and well, what really happened was, you know, had they set it the price appropriately and said unlimited for $70 a month, they wouldn't be complaining about it. They set the price too low for what the actual usage turned out to be. I mean, all of their models ahead of time, they were so wrong it wasn't even funny, and they're just like, we totally underestimated how much people use their phones. What happened, because if they'd said it at $70, they'd be like, totally fine, no big deal, we're still making money.
Even the man on stage showing off the iPhone, the crazy dreamer, the one who believed in the impossible, Steve Jobs, thought that they'd only get to 1% in the first year, and only maybe, you know. I mean, it was like, you know, everybody was completely unprepared for it, and you know, the data usage is the exact same thing. Yeah, so it's just a, you know, but at the same time, I think a large reason, part of the reason why the iPhone sold is because they didn't charge $70 for data. You know, if it had cost $70 for data, you'd be talking about a completely different user group than who actually got on the phone, and the vast changes that we've seen in the phone industry are almost, you know, directly tied to the price of the data.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, I already feel is like, you know, and I don't know. So it's, to me, you know, yeah, obviously AT&T hates the fact that that they did that to themselves, but it couldn't really be any other way, I think. And, you know, it's just a, yeah.
I don't feel bad for
them. It'll be fascinating.
Not at all.
Not at all. Yeah, they make tons and tons and tons of money, and they're going to continue to make tons of money, so.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm sorry you lose sleep over that.
Yeah, well.
I wish I could have your problems. Dang it, we're too popular.
So, anything else going on in your life besides watching Avengers, which is apparently a pretty good movie?
Get to start building a new website tomorrow. That should be pretty fun.
Ah, cool.
I'm having a consultants meeting where I'll actually get to figure out exactly what they need and what they want. So. That'll be a pretty big project, and you know, just still. CrateSpace is really cool. I'm becoming a really big believer in CrateSpace, a subsidiary of Amazon. They're a publishing branch. Pretty nice bunch of people. They have a tremendous amount of different tools for publishers. I can definitely see why people go this route. Because what's surprising to me is, you know, it's not just that you can print your book. It's not just, oh, we'll edit your book or proof your book, but they'll also do like press releases and where you can be like, it's kind of ridiculously expensive, but you can write like a page long press release, and they'll distribute it to all the major people that need to get that in front of them. They'll hook you up with book reviewers. They're actually a full blown publishing house. You just pay the upfront cost instead of them, and it's all part. You sit there and go, wow, that actually makes unbelievable amount of sense, really. And you know, it just makes me more and more convinced that, you know, it's the future of publishing. And you know, I may never be a huge successful publisher just because of, you know, wherever my, you know, my talent lies, but I think you're going to see a lot of publishers. And it's interesting, top five books on the on pretty much all book sales right now are those like 50 Shades of Grey books. That I don't know if you've heard anything about them.
No,
people
I haven't.
Don't like to talk about them. They're like they're like, you know, those romance novels that are like,
yeah, I know what you're talking, you know, about.
Yeah, they're basically that, but so everybody's reading them, but nobody's talking about them, and you know, but they're what was I going to say? Oh, they started out as self-publishing through CrateSpace, so you know, and eventually they're selling so many books that major publishers picked them up. So it's, you know. Oh, it's a wave of the future. It's happening, and it's exciting to be part of that.
Cool. That is cool. I last week mentioned doing some app/web development. Still doing it. Didn't do as much this week as I wanted to. All I did was design and create the database system. That was it. And cool. Which is pretty easy, so it's not that big of a deal. And
for you.
Yeah, sure. And then I'm studying for a test that I'll be taking in like a week and a half or something like that. So,
woo-hoo.
Yeah, that's been all my life. Pretty cool. All right, awesome. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.
Okay. You ready?
I am ready.
All right. Before we get into the heart of the show, just remember, no spoilers. Not everybody has seen it.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
And now, quiet.